We started discussing last time the matzav of Eretz Yisrael in the time of Yanai HaMelech. And also we discussed about a different threat that took place in Eretz Yisrael. And this came about through the influence that came from Egypt and what was going on in Egypt, which was the center of the Yevonim, and also was the center of Avodah Zarah, because Egypt was a little bit of a crossroads in the empire that existed at that time. And there you had people from all different beliefs and all different cultures who came together, especially in the city of Alexandria. And we explained that that is the place where Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya ran away to, and with him he took Yeshu HaNoitzri. These are the Gemaras that talk about the fact that when he came back into Eretz Yisrael and he brought back with him Yeshu HaNoitzri, so the influence that came from Mitzrayim came with Yeshu HaNoitzri back into Eretz Yisrael. And that influence had to do with Bittul of Divrei Chachamim, Malik B'Divrei Chachamim, which we saw in the Gemara in Gittin. And also there was an inyan of pritzas, immorality, which was in the statements of Yeshu HaMetzri himself when he spoke to Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya. And also the Gemara says that he was a Mesis, Umeidiyach Benegeya to Avodah Zarah, and also he was a Machashiv, and that's the reason why he was Mechuyiv Misa. And we also saw in the Gemara that he was a Korav L'Malchus. The Malchus at that time was the Malchus of Yanai. So obviously he had an influence. He was a popular person. And we see that in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And that's the reason why when they brought him to the Mechayev Misa, so they had to do it quickly, because he was a Korav L'Malchus. So obviously he had an influence in the country at that time. As we explained, this is not the Yeshu HaNoitzri that is the founder of Christianity, because he lived at least 100 years later, and also because the whole story that happened with him is a whole different story altogether. He was put to death by the Romans through crucifixion, and so forth. The whole background to the story is completely different. So obviously this is somebody else entirely, and this is also what's said by the Rishonim, Rabbi Yechiel Mipariz, in the debate that he had with the Galochim. So he explains this. You see this from the Ramban in the Sefer Vikuach that we have from the Ramban. So we're talking about somebody else entirely, but this was an influence that was found in Eretz Yisrael. Also, it would seem, even from the history books that they have, and they now are able to prove that this is what's going on in Eretz Yisrael at that time, that we can't prove that he started this, but there was at that time in Eretz Yisrael a movement that was called the Gnostics. And the Gnostics were literally Avodah Zarah, believing in different koiches that were found on the Bria, and they explained where the Torah came from, Rahman al-Sanfina, with their explanations, and as with one kayach and Racha kayach, and they took off on this. And this became a Gansa Shita and a Gansa belief, and involved in this is that everything that was B'gashmias has to do with the Tzad Hara, everything that has to do with Ruchnias has to do with the Tzad HaTayv. And from this, they branched off into different beliefs. There were those who spent their lives being Pirish from Gashmias as much as possible. And that was one branch. But then there was another branch altogether. And they believed that the two different Mahalchim that are found in the person, so each can go and do his own thing. So the Gashmias to do as much as he wanted, the Gashmias, and while in the Ruchnias, which was in a person's mind, so he could go off into the Ruchnias. The Gnostics has to do with knowledge. They believe that there's a certain knowledge that the sparks that are found within a person need to know in order to be released, in order to be able to go into the world, the upper world that they came from, and so forth. Once again, this is really not Negea for us to go into and to understand exactly what they believed in, but just to accept it in this form that this was literally Avodah Zarah, had to do with many different, that their belief that there were many different kaychas that were found in the Bria. Included in that, they also believed that when a person does the tzad hara, so it's almost like you could do something, you should do things that are wrong, because by doing things that are wrong, so that guf is just the way when the guf goes about his business of his taivus and his retainus. So being that he's doing it and he has the sparks that are of holiness that are found in him, so he's mekadesh it and he's mekayer it and so forth. So this was their whole mahalach. There was they found holy reasons for them to do terrible things. The holy reasons to do very unholy things and a very unholy type of an existence. And this had to do with the immoral way of their life, immorality, with Zanus. It also had to do with the fact that they used to meet only in those places, in the catacombs, with the places where they buried the people, in where the graves were found. And the truth is that there was, in the future times, they accused the Christians of this, and these exact things, and the Christians explained that this wasn't them, but this was the Gnostics that were involved, and that had to do with the fact that the Gnostics adopted a profile which was, they wanted to project, was similar to the Christian type of a profile, and therefore it sort of gave a black eye to the Christians. And in the debates that they had at the time when they were, before they became popular and they were unpopular, so they went to explain that this belief is a different belief entirely, this is Gnosticism, and this is not what they believe in. And basically it came because of this. And as we're explaining, this came through Egypt. This is the Avodah Zarah that was found in Egypt at the time, and the different lifestyles that was found there. And now Nebuchadnezzar, it was brought into Eretz Yisrael. And it was an influence in Eretz Yisrael. And it became an influence in Eretz Yisrael with people that were doing this, who claimed to be doing this for all kinds of holy reasons. It could very well be that might be also a pshat in a Gemara that the Gemara is alluding to. And again, we explain that the Gemara doesn't talk much about this, and it's partially because a lot of this was taken out of the Gemara because of when the censors went through the Gemara, so they thought that a lot of this had to do with Christianity. But as they took out the Gemaras in Sanhedrin talking about Yeshua and Noitri, which we, as we explained, wasn't really Christianity, and there was really no reason to take it out, but they took it out because they assumed that that's who was meant. And it could be other Gemaras were also taken out, and therefore we don't know too much about what was going on at that time. One wonders, though, if this is perhaps the pshat in the Gemara, on the Gemara in Saita, on Daf Chav Beis Amid Beis. And over here the Gemara is talking about the days before, right before Yanai died. And as we explained before, that Yanai was a very, very cruel king, and Beikar, his cruelty went over to the Prushim, and the only saving factor that he ever had in his life was the fact that his wife was a sister to Shimon ben Shetach. She was a tzaddikus, and with the influence of Shimon ben Shetach, so we did have periods of time where some good did come about in Eretz Yisrael. But towards the end, after the Maisa, where Shimon ben Shet, after the Maisa, where Yameh HaMelech, by Nisuch HaMayim, he poured the water on his feet, and he showed once again that he Be'etzim is a Tzduki. So there was a complete fallout, so to say, between him and the Perushim. And from there on, they started again with Sichus Rachman Alatlan against the Prushim, against those people that followed in the Derech HaTorah, until at the end of his life, when he finally was on his deathbed, he called to his wife. And what he told to his, and he told his wife as follows. And it would seem that the situation was that she was afraid that once he dies, so the whole of Eretz Yisrael is going to take revenge from her. She's left over, and she'll be, you know, the Alta Almona. She was, like he mentioned, she was 20 years older than him. She must have been then in her 50s, 60s. So she was afraid that Gantz Eretz Yisrael is going to take revenge from her because of the cruelty of her husband. And so Yanai told her like this, and this is a couple of lines before the Mishnah and the Gemara in Satan of Chavbez on the base. Amalei Yanai Malka Lidabisu. So Yanai HaMelech told this to his wife. Al Tisri Min HaPerushim. Don't be afraid of the Perushim. And Rashi explains, she was afraid of the Perushim because Yanai killed out the Chachamim. And when he was dying, so she was afraid that they're going to take Nekama from her. So he told her, don't be afraid of the Tzdukim, don't be afraid of the Perushim, as Rashi says, Shetzadikim heim, v'loy gemalucha ra, v'loy levonecha, sh'loy chatu lehem, because you didn't sin to them, and your children didn't sin to him, and they're tzadikim, so they're not going to take revenge from you. So don't be afraid of the Perushim. For loyni mi she'enam Perushim, and don't be afraid from those who are not the Perushim, of course referring to the Tzdukim, as Rashi says, because they were his allies, she'em oyavai, they were his allies, so you don't have to be afraid of them. Ela min ha-tzvoyin. But you have to be afraid of the tzvoyim. And Rashi says, what are the tzvoyim? She'ein mar isam kil toldoisam. They look different than what they actually do. But they look like tzadikim, but they're not tzadikim, they're actually rishoyim. I guess we would call them hypocrites, or these are people that are not oiskahalten the people. And the Gemara fears is shedaimim leprushim, and that they are similar to prushim. In other words, that they look like prushim. Shemaiseim kemaisei zimri umevakshim schar kepinchas. They do acts like zimri, and they're looking for schar like Pinchas. Now, in the Gemara, when the Gemara says that these people, if we understand the Gemara simply, so the Gemara is telling us that these people are hypocrites because they do the acts of Zimri, and the acts of Zimri, of course, is the acts of Znus, and they want Schar like Pinchas. Pinchas, of course, is the one who killed Zimri, he is the Kanoi. So he was the one that wiped out the Znus. So they do Znus, and they want Schar like Pinchas. Now, the Mashor, yes, and this Gemara, that Zimri wasn't a hypocrite. Zimri was outwardly, he did Znus, I can't. If anything, he wanted it very much to be bepirsum what he was doing. He was proud of what he was doing. So, when he said that you shouldn't be like the people who do maisim like Zimri, so we're referring to doing maisim berabim, not maisim betzina. That's what Zimri did at berab. Umavashim schar kepinchas, and they want schar like Pinchas. So if you read the Gemara simply, it's mashma that we're talking about people that outwardly and everybody could see they're being over on Isurim of Znus, and yet they come and they kinda that they want to get schar like Pinchas, that they're tzaddikim. They're doing Maisim of Rishus, and they claim that they deserve a reward like a tzaddik. So what does this mean? What kind of people are these? And Yanai seems to say that these people, these are the people to fear in Eretz Yisrael. They're the worst. They're the biggest Rishonim in Eretz Yisrael. They're the ones that you have to fear. So who are these people? Once again, the Mashiach is for Akash and the Gemara, that L'chayre, the Gemara's comparison to Zimri and to Pinchas is not a poshta comparison. Perhaps that what the Gemara was alluding to were these people. These are the people, these Gnostics, these were people that were doing Maisei Zimri, and they did it openly, Maisei Zimri. But they did these Maisei Zimri, they claimed to what that they were doing was righteous deeds, this Maisei Tzidkis. They're doing Maisei Nevola, and somehow they were able to convince themselves, I don't know who else they were able to convince, but they were able to convince themselves that these mice and the volas that they were doing were really tzidkis mikamaisim. And because of that, they deserve schar like Pinchas. They're really righteous people. They're living an immoral life, but they deserve a reward like tzaddikim. And this would be mashma, that from this, the Pashtus, the way the Gemara says, it would be mashma that they were, that they were explaining, that this describes very well these people that we're talking about. These Gnostics. And these are the people that did Rishus, the Shita, and these are now the new enemy over the horizon. You don't have to worry about the Prussian. You don't have to worry about the Misyavnim. These were his allies. But these now are the new enemy over the horizon, and these are the people that you have to worry about. Now, we're going to study, we're not going to discuss it now by Arichas, but this Shita, Rachmon Slam, stayed with us for many, many generations. Perhaps one day, if we ever get to talk about Shavsa Tzvi. So this was a Shita that somehow he adopted into his method also, the same kind of twisted way of thinking that he tried to utilize also in pursuing his ideology, so to say, in the world. But once again, and I think we'll see it as we move along also, that definitely this was a Shita that was developing in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. After Yanai died, as we mentioned, his wife was left as an almona, and the sister of Shimon ben Shetach, and she took over the Malchus. She became the queen. For 8 years she was the queen, and it would seem that these were the best years that were found in Eretz Yisrael. Actually, this is the correct one. 10 years of peace that was found in Eretz Yisrael, and under the rule of this queen, it was in this time that it's interesting that we have a Gemara, and the Gemara is a Gemara in Tainus and that Chof Gimel Amar Aleph. And it's also more Ba'arichas in the Medrash in the Yikra Rabbah, that the Medrash describes this situation that was going on in Eretz Yisrael, then the Gashmi is the situation in Eretz Yisrael, the fruits were growing, everything, there was food, people had what to eat, there also people felt very secure, because this Malka, she had no intention of conquering different countries, different lands, like Yanai had, like Eichanan had. Our whole interest was to secure Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael should be safe from the enemy. So if there were soldiers, the soldiers were there in order to protect Eretz Yisrael, not to go to do battle with somebody else. So the army that was built up was a defensive army that was built up. And they successfully were able to see to it that Eretz Yisrael should be protected. So people lived with a Meridika Matzev, where they had what to eat, people had parnasa, people lived a secure type of a life, they weren't afraid of the enemy that would come from outside of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And under such circumstances, people are able to lead a very good Ruchniistic life also, because a person is not worried, he's able to learn, and they were able to take care of a lot of the Ruchniistic needs then also. The Sanhedrin was strengthened, people, Chachomim, that were afraid until this point to come back into Eretz Yisrael, because the one who was in charge was Yanai. So even after the reinsurances that came from Shimon ben Shetach, but there were still people that were afraid. Now they came back into Eretz Yisrael. The Chachomim, once again, all gathered in Eretz Yisrael. So the whole matzav in Eretz Yisrael was very mechuzik. There is one of the Fruma history books that we have that's called Our People. So over there he brings two different things that took place at that time. I wasn't able to trace the Makairis of this, but he's Nemanolai and everything, and the book is very, very Eiskahalten. He brings two different sort of takones that were made at that time, that were made to be Mechazik the Matzev in Eretz Yisrael. But once again, what we always need to understand when we look at takonis and we look at different things that the Chachamim at that time did for the Matzev in Eretz Yisrael, so we always through that understand the tzairich that there was. In other words, if a takona was made, so obviously there was a need for a takona. And if there was a need for a takana, so we're looking at a wonderful thing, the takana, wonderful thing that was done, but underneath that, obviously there's a problem. And it's because of that problem that now this act had to be done. If there wouldn't have been a problem, then things would have remained as they were before. One of the things that they did was, that he brings, was that they instituted that from all over the world, people should give the Machzitz HaShekel. Not just the people living in Eretz Yisrael, and we know the Machzitz HaShekel went for the Karbonis, went for the Lishkas, went to the Bedek HaBayis. So he brings that they instituted a takono that people from all over the world should send the Machzitz HaShekel into Eretz Yisrael. They should have enough for the Karbonis, they should have enough in order for the Bedek HaBayis, and the truth is, there was enough before the money came from outside of Eretz Yisrael. So included in that was that if there would be money that would be left over, that money would be used for the Aniyim and for those who were Isaac and Torah in Eretz Yisrael at that time. So the idea was that support should come from outside Eretz Yisrael in order to be Mechazik, the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, whatever that meant. Of course, it meant the Beis HaMikdash, and it meant everything else that was included in the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael. That all of this should become Mechuzik, because now it would have wide support coming from all over the world, wherever Yidden were found. We understand that besides the financial benefit that it had, that now there was more funds that were found in the Beis HaMikdash and Eretz Yisrael so that they could take care of the Tzrachim, but it also gave people a kesher to what was doing in Eretz Yisrael. people living in different countries outside of Eretz Yisrael were not involved in what was doing in Eretz Yisrael. When a person sends funds to Eretz Yisrael or to anything that he sends funds to, so that automatically gives him an interest in what's going on over there. Well, the Stutzgarten, you know, he wants to know where's the money going, what's doing, how are things doing. Eretz Yisrael is not locked out of people's lives. So it would seem that that was also a chelik of their kavana. And perhaps they realized that the situation in then, although under this Malka for these couple of years, for these 10 years, so it was, there was a break in the Tzoros, but who knew how long this was going to last. And they needed that from all over the world, Yidden should still have a concern and have an interest in all that was going on in Eretz Yisrael. He also brings down, and he says that there is a Gemara, a Mishnah and a Gemara in Tainus, and that we're going to talk about. And he says that the Takana that this Gemara talks about was instituted in this same period of time. And he refers to a Gemara in Tainus, a Mishnah in Tainus. The Mishnah is on Daf Chavov Amid Beis. And the Mishnah over here starts off by saying as follows. Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Vayhayu yam tovim liYisrael kechamisha asa ba'av b'chiyoy ma'akipurim. There wasn't yam tovim, happy days, for Klal Yisrael like chamisha asa ba'av and Yom Kippur. These 2 days were the happiest days of the years. Shebehem b'nais Yisrael yoytzeis b'kli lovan. And the Mishnah goes on to explain that besides, and we'll have to see this besides, because the Gemara will explain, Yom Kippur was a happy day because that was the day when Klal Yisrael had its kapara. What was the happy day about Chamisha Asar Ba'av? So the Gemara, further on, towards the end of the Masechta, Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, so over here the Gemara says many different things that took place, and it also says that when it came the Chamisha Asar Ba'av, that this was also a day when they stopped cutting down the trees that they used throughout the year on the Mizbeach. The Chamisha Asar Ba'av Eilach Toshas Kechei Shochama. That was the day when they stopped cutting down the tree because the sun was not as strong and therefore wouldn't dry out the wood. It's not important at this point to go into exactly what it was, and the Gemara describes different things that went on at that time. But also at that time was the day that B'nai Yisrael used to go out, and they went out wearing white clothing, she'ulin, and it was borrowed clothing. Why was it borrowed? Shleilavayish is misha einlay, in order not to embarrass a person that didn't have. So it's all women, in other words, it shouldn't be that one would be dressed better than somebody else, and even if they would be dressed, it's not because they owned it, but because they borrowed it, so it would have no bearing on the person itself. And this was all done because not to be mavayish misha engle, a person who didn't have. The Mishnah goes on to say that that they used to be tevel all of the begotten to make sure that they are tor. And the Mishnah explains it, but perhaps it's clearer in the Gemara when the Gemara describes exactly what they did when these women went out. The Gemara Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that the ones yafiyos shebehem, those women that were pretty, mahoyu einrais, what did they say? Tnuei nechem liyafi. That they, I choose me as a wife. That the pashtus of the Gemara choose me as a wife because I am beautiful. Then the Gemara says, what happens? A woman who was not beautiful, Yuchasei Shebehem, Mahoyu Imres. Those that were the Yuchaseis, they had Yichas, but what did they say? So they said, Tnuei Lechem Lemishpacha, and Gati She'eina Isha El Lebanim. Then the Gemara says, Mechu'arei Shebehem, Mahoyu Imres. Those who were ugly, what did they say? They said, Chumechem L'shum Shamayim. They said to the men that you should take it, you should marry me, and do it L'shem Shamayim. So this was a different, this was the system that was done. Each one of the women, based on the Mila that they had, so they tried to find for themselves husbands. If you look in the Mishnah Achreina, on the Mishnah, as he goes to explain, that we were talking about women who weren't able to find a shidduch. So if they weren't able to find a shidduch, I mean, the typical father is not, he says, perhaps wouldn't go through with such a system, but if you weren't able to find a shidduch, so this is what they did. And this was a system that they used, and therefore it was a tremendous simcha at that time. Now, once again, they instituted it now. It would seem that there was a tzairich for it now. There was a tzairich now to look for methods which perhaps would not have been used in the past in order to see to it that women should be able to find shidduchim. And the methods were perhaps not standard methods that would be used in Klal Yisrael, especially not in the previous days, but there was a need for it. And perhaps this follows with what we explained before, that they were masaking aksuba. Well, we learned the simple pshat in the Gemara that they were masaking aksuba, and as we said, the Gemara said that the reason was because women were afraid to get married, because they were afraid that their husbands would be megarish them, would divorce them, if there wouldn't be a ksuba, or however you learn pshat in the Gemara, if there wouldn't be a chizuk in the Indian of ksuba, so they were afraid that their husbands would be megarish them. So, that there was this kind of a problem that existed in Klal Yisrael. And where did this problem come from? And here again, we have the same type of a problem. Miuchoseis, who were looking for a shidduch. Mechuores, that looks, that they came with kindness of doing things l'shem shemayim. It would seem even the afyei shebehem, but for some reason they weren't able to get married, maybe because there was, I guess like you would say, it was a problem getting people to commit. And this has to do with the chayr, with the psashvachkeit that was found in the tzir, in the tzibur of Klal Yisrael at that time. This is part and parcel of a yidach, made the eshte mitzvah and the tayrus, the chpru vu, to establish future tayrus, and so forth and so on. So, why should it be a problem? Why should it be a problem of these people finding for themselves a zivuk? Unless, perhaps, we can explain that once again, this was the influence that came in through this Maisa of Yeshua Netzri that came into Eretz Yisrael and that was found in Eretz Yisrael at that time. As time went on, and this queen, Shloimis, she was very old, and she was holding by her last couple of days. She realized that her two children, she had two children. The older one, his name was Hyrcanus, and the younger one, whose name was Aristobulus, neither one of them was Grace of Tzadik, like we would say. They both grew up in the house of Yanai, and growing up in the house of Yanai under the influence of the Tzedukim. But between the two, it would seem that she felt that her older son, Hyrcanus, was the more suited, would be the one who would be more suited as the next king. He was right now the Kohen Gadol, and he was a person who was described as being very weak in character. He wasn't a strong-minded person, he was a weak-minded person, a weak-spirited person. Aristobulus, on the other hand, was a very hot-tempered and a strong-willed person. And it would also seem that he had a stronger shaychus with the tzedukim than Hyrcanus had. And as she, before she died, so she left over, in at least her will was, that this Hyrcanus, he should be the one that should take over the kingdom after she died. But this Aristobulus realized what was going to happen, so even before she died, so he started carrying on, he developed an army, he forced his mother to give him over certain cities, fortified cities, so that he would be able to build up his army and build up his might. And after his mother died, so, and Hyrcanus became the king, now took over as the king. So as soon as he died, he challenged him for to be the ruler in Eretz Yisrael. More or less, what we have is that this Aristobulus, he had an army that was made up of the Tzedukim. This more or less was the army that he used in order to do battle against this Hyrcanus. Well, Hyrcanus, when he realized the situation, so he backed down. Well, I guess he wasn't all that excited about being the king anyway, because of the type of person that he was. So he backed down, gave over the kingdom to his brother, and he went back to his position as Kohen Gadol. And things would have more or less settled in that position, except for the fact that there was, as we mentioned a while ago, Yochanan Hyrcanus, in his time when he was conquering different parts, different lands around Eretz Yisrael on his campaign to make Eretz Yisrael more and more powerful, so he took over the land of the Edomites. And the Edomites, they were Goyim, and he was Megayer them Bal Kochoch, and by doing this he brought them in to Eretz Yisrael. So now they were sort of officially Yidden, who were living in what was now officially Eretz Yisrael, because he annexed this whole land into Eretz Yisrael. We discussed then, it's difficult to know exactly what type of a Geiris it was. Pashtus, it was no Geiris at all. Maybe they were Avadim, but it's not important. What's important for us now to understand is that the Chachamim never were happy, without a doubt, to the situation that was going on with these Edomites. The governor, who was in charge of that end of the country, of this of Edom, this part of Edom that was now annexed into Eretz Yisrael, so his name was Antipater. Antipater was also one of these Gerim, and he was at all times looking and hopeful that he would be able to gain power in Eretz Yisrael. Somehow, he was hoping to gain power in Eretz Yisrael. At one period of time, he made friends with this Hyrcanus, knowing that Hyrcanus had a very weak character. So he pictured himself, being that he befriended this Hyrcanus, he pictured himself as his chief advisor. And by being his chief advisor, and he would be the king, and Hyrcanus is a weak person, so that would give him tremendous power in Eretz Yisrael. But now that Hyrcanus backed down and gave over the Kayach to Aristobulus, and as we said, Aristobulus was a very strong-willed person, so this would automatically make it so that this Antipater, he was out of commission. He sided the wrong candidate. I guess it happens nowadays too. You side the wrong candidate, so then you're out. But besides that, the candidate that won was a strong-willed person, and no advisor was going to have any special kayach with him. So this Antipater went to Hyrcanus, and he raised him on. He convinced him. He said, "Why did you give away the kingdom to your brother?" Who knows what he told him. Maybe he just played on his character, and he said, "He's your younger brother. Why should you give up such a glorious kingdom to him?" Maybe even he said that you'd be more appropriate, you know, you're more of a idealistic person than your brother, and you'll do better for Klal. Who knows what he told him. But whatever he told him, he convinced him that after a couple of years, 2.5 years, he convinced him that he should go back and he should take the kingdom back from his brother. Well, when he argued that his brother has a strong army, how is he possibly going to be able to take back the country from his brother? So the next piece of advice that he gave him was is that another one of the lands that they conquered was the Arab lands that were outside what we would call today Transjordan. And he says that this was outside of Eretz Yisrael. There were some lands that they took from there, but there was a kingdom in Transjordan outside of Eretz Yisrael. He said, "Why don't you go to this king and tell him that he should join you and taking back the Malchus from Aristopolis, and b'schar zeh, you'll give him back the cities that Yochanan Hyrcanus took away from you, and China. This way you'll be able to, you'll have his army, and you'll be able to take back Eretz Yisrael." And Kachava, he went, and he joined together with Antipater, and he also joined together with this Arab king, and together they came to march on Eretz Yisrael, onto Yerushalayim, in order to take back the kingdom from Aristobulus. The whole idea was to take the kingdom back from Aristobulus. And we learn, and we should see that the Gemara talks about this also, that basically what happened was Aristobulus saw Hyrcanus coming together with Antipater, people, the Edomites, together with these Arabs. He retreated, and he came into Yerushalayim, and he retreated all the way back into the Motem HaMikdash. And that's where he stayed. That's where he fortified himself, fighting against his brother, Hyrcanus. Now, over here we have a Gemara. The Gemara is found a few places. Gemara in Saita, Gemara in Menachis, Gemara in Baba Kama. Gemara is a few places, and basically this is what the Gemara says. We're gonna learn from the Gemara in Saita, the Gemara in Daf Mem Tes Amid Beis, and this is what it says in the Gemara. A very striking Gemara that, as usual, as with every Gemara, you have to be ma'ayin a little bit in this Gemara in order to really understand what the Gemara is telling us. Besides the simple historical facts that we're going to take out of the Gemara, what is the Gemara telling us? So the Gemara says as follows. Toda Rabbanan. Kishitzaru malchei beis chashmenoi ze al ze. When there was a revolution, there was a war between Malchus Beis Chashmenoi, one with the other. They were fighting each other. You know, this is ironic in itself. The Chashmenoim, who banded together to take away Eretz Yisrael from the Yevanim, so now they were split between themselves, and they were fighting between themselves. And the Gemara says, Hoya Hyrcanus Mibachutz. Hyrcanus was on the outside of the city, of the Beis HaMikdash, of the outside of Yerushalayim, but Aristobulus mibifnim, and Aristobulus was inside. And the Gemara is telling us that Aristobulus was inside the Beis HaMikdash, and you have to bring korbanos, you had to, the Avodah had to go on in the Beis HaMikdash, but Hyrcanus laid siege to the Makom HaMikdash. So how many behemoths could they possibly have in the Beis HaMikdash? So they were makriv the behemoths that they had, but they weren't able to get any more behemoths because, as we said, Hyrcanus laid siege around the city, so you weren't able to get in order to bring the behemoths into the city. So what could they do? And Aristobulus, everybody was concerned, even Hyrcanus was concerned, that the Avodah should continue in the Beis HaMikdash, because the two of them were fighting. It's Einzach, Fosat HaSatan, the Avodah has to go on in the Beis HaMikdash. So what should be done? Aristobulus was inside. So the Gemara says, B'chol yoyim v'yoyim, every single day, hayu mishalshlim dinorim b'kupa, they lowered dinorim coins in a basket, umalim lahem tamidim, and in other words, they would lower the coins over the wall, and to the army of Hyrcanus, they took the money. They bought with this a behema, a seh, or whatever that they needed for a carbon tamid, and they would bring, they would lift up through the same basket, they would lift up the carbon tamid into Yerushalayim. So these two people were fighting, but as the fighting was going on, they would lower the money, and they would bring up the carbon tamid. This much they had cooperation, because they all were interested that the korbanah should be brought. The Gemara says, Hayisham zokein echod, there was an old man, Shoye makir b'chochmas yevonis. He knew chochma yevonis. And lo'az lahem b'chochmas yevonis. And he spoke to them, or he translated to them in chochmas yevonis. So it's a little bit difficult to know exactly what was going on over here, what it is, why it's important that he knew Chochmas Yevonis, or what he was saying in Chochmas Yevonis, as we'll see the Gemara Baita, but obviously there was an influence that he had, that he used in order to bepile the next statement that he made, using the Chochma of Yevonis in order that they should accept what he was there to teach them. Amar lahem, and he told them, Kol zman sha'iskim ba'avoido, as long as the avoido will be able to be done, ein nimsar b'yedchem. So then, you're not going to be able to take them over. You think that they're bringing korbanos and it's good for everybody. Well, the schus of them bringing the korbanos, the schus that Aristobulus is bringing the korbanos, so that's a schus for him, that's a point for his side, and you're not going to be able to take him over. L'machar shul shulahem dinorim bekupa, ve'el lahem chazir. Tomorrow, after they lower to you the money, so you send them back up in the basket, send them up a chazir. Chazir, what are you going to do with this chazir? They should bring it for a carbon nachmanos and the mizbeach. Anyway, that's what they did. They sent them a chazir, obviously understanding that they can't bring it as a carbon. But can't bring it as a carbon, you don't have to send back up a chazir. You could just send back up nothing. You could, or at least take out the money and put in an apple or something. Well, what's up as a chazir? I mean, the chazir is not only a chazir, it's a chazir. You know, it represents what it represents. So that's what they did. Kivan shehigia lechatzi chayma, when the chazir was being lifted up. And I guess they didn't realize what they were lifting up. They were pulling up the basket. They couldn't see what they were pulling up. So they were lifting up the basket. Not tiparnov. So the chazir went and it dug its nails. Bechayma. In the backwards in Bechayma, he dug his nails into the wall. And nizdazeya eretz Yisrael. And the Bach puts in Arba Meyer's Tarsal Arba Meyer's parsa. So the ganze Eretz Yisrael, they're given a shokul, arba meis parsa, arba meis parsa. So, of course, we understand this line, the pashtus, there's a tifra havon over here, in what it means, but whatever it exactly means, but the derech klal, what it means is that at this point, Eretz Yisrael, the Makom HaMikdash, Kedushas Yisrael, that's Chagemen HaTreisel, you know, it's Chagemen HaShokel, it moved, it moved out of place. And it never was the same afterwards. Sending up a chazir up into the wall, and again with the noat tiparna of the Christ, we also have to understand that this, the Gemara is being meramis to us something. The chazir kenish machin shokolin for abemay is parasa. But over here it did, and it did because of all that was behind this chazir and all that was behind what was going on. At that particular point, against Eretz Yisrael, they gave an atreis, and Amru. Then the Gemara goes later and says, "Oisei Shah Amru." At that time, was said, "Orur Adam Shigadol Chazerim, v'Orur Adam Shilmed Lebenoi Chochmas Yevonis." Cursed is the person, a klola on the person that's Megadol Chazerim in Eretz Yisrael. And a klola on a person sheyulmad lebnoi chokmas yevonis. So once again, even not understanding exactly how this was done or exactly what they did, but whatever exactly what they did and how they did, and the Chochmas Yevonis was Poildis, and Chochmas Yevonis was Poildis, as we said, that's why they needed a person that was Makir b'Chochmas Yevonis and Laws behem b'Chochmas Yevonis. So you needed a person that was seeped into Chochmas Yevonis, and he was able to be Poildis, that this Chazir was able to Gebat Chesel to Ganze Eretz Yisrael, and that it should be able to move Arba Meis Parsa. Alarba Meis Parsa. Well, as a result of this that happened, so the battles over here, the Gemara doesn't give us the Gemara doesn't give us a little bit weiter of what happened, but we know that the battle continued. They stopped the Avodah and the battle continued. So I mention at this point another thing that took place at that time, and this is brought down in all of the history books. They mention this, quoting from Josephus, and Josephus says like this, that at this same period of time when this Hyrcanus was surrounding the Beis HaMikdash, so they went and they brought Hunia Magal. Hunia Magal, he should give a klola on Aristopolis. So that's what he brings down. This is a method that they used. They couldn't get him out. So I guess this is before the Maisa with the Chazar, after the Maisa with the Chazar, but they couldn't get him out. So they went and they brought Hunia Magal. Chunia Magal, as we know from the Gemara, so M. Mitzayn Tfilis, he was able to be Poyel Mary the Kazachim. He was the one that got the rain to come, and he was called Chunia Magal. He got the name that he made a circle, because he made a circle around him, and he said that he's not going out of the circle until it starts to rain. So that's how he got his nickname of Chunia Magal and his reputation. So, if you have to be poydel in order to beat out an Aristopolis, so bring Chunia Magal. So, they brought him, and they told him that, they told this Chuni that you should be Mespal in order to be Mespal in order to get Aristopolis out of the Mokum HaMikdash. So Josephus says that this was Hunia Magal's tefillah. He saw that he can't be poil. So this was his tefillah. He was the spowl to Ribbono Shel Olam. He says as follows. He says, the people in the Makom HaMikdash, so they're from Bnei Yisrael, the Kehanim from Bnei Yisrael. The people outside, they're also from Bnei Yisrael. And he was mispalel, Ribbono Shel Olam, don't let one side win over the other side, because whoever is going to win, Eden, obviously, are going to lose. So Vastaydis the winning, the Eden are going to be there. There are Eden here that are going to be killed. If there's Eden fighting against Goyim, so Matan Abuchonok, this is Eden, submission to Eden. So he was misfal, Ribbono Shel Olam, don't be makabel either one of the tefillahs. It should remain a status quo that nobody should win this war. So when Hyrcanus saw what he did, so it says further, they took him and they killed him. Now, just to stop here for a second, you see a little bit over here also. I mean, what does this mean? They come and be mispalel. You know, they're going to sing him. They're going to force him to be mispalel for their team. Be mispalel for this team, not for the other team. Obviously, they don't have if it's a musig in versus the tefillah. I mean, how are they going to know which team he's being mispalel for? It's just always like, listen to the words. I mean, say these words, don't say the other words. I mean, the tefillah is by the shabalev. I mean, this whole idea, it just doesn't make any sense in the way we understand versus the tefillah. Obviously, they looked at this Chuni Amagel as with a goyish cook. You know, they looked at him like he's a miracle worker. Like, you know, you'd have if the goyim would understand a miracle worker. You know, a magician, and he's going to say, you know, obviously he's able to say the right words, and if he says the right words, so then you know, something is going to he's going to say the words, and maybe he's going to sprinkle some kind of a water on them, or that is what he's going to do, you know, and that's going to do the trick, because he is a person that has some kind of a talent, you know. It's not, you know, he has a talent, and it's a talent that when he says something, so somehow miraculously what he says happens. You know, this is a psagoyish music. And this is a music. It sounds like an avaydazaradika kind of a music. Or maybe you can call it a kishavdika kind of a music that they looked at this. You know, and it sounds like that's the way they understood this. Verdos is their achmolos, and Verdos is their chuni amagel also. You know, with that goyish fashtand. So that's how they thought that they're understanding where the Chuni HaMagel is. And that's why they insisted that he do what they wanted him to do. So, of course, there's Chodnishkin Ver, there's Chodnishkin Meinung, and as a result of this whole thing, like we said, Chuni HaMagel went, then he was mispalled at Ribbono Shel Olam. He was mispalled that he hopes that nobody should be killed between the two of them, and they took him out and they killed him. But I think what we need to take from this is that once again we see a little bit the matzav of, you know, like we say, the mindset of the people that were living, the hashvah that was found, you know, on this Hyrcanus. That was his understanding of Osir Das Tefillah. This was the you know, of Satzadik was a magician, and this was, I think, once again, besides the Hashpah that was Zerayin Krochin into Klal Yisrael, that came through the influence that came in through what was going on in Mitzrayim at that time. So at this point where we're leaving, this is we have these two brothers that are at each other's necks, each one trying to conquer the other. And next time, Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach, we're going to learn what happened at this point.